The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest is Alex Major. Alex is an attorney at Shepard Mullin. Alex is in Shepard Mullin's government contracts practice, where he focuses on regulatory compliance, claims work, Civil False Claims Act litigation, right, Alex?
Absolutely.
But also what we're going to talk about today, and that is the cloud, and the cloud in government contracts context, and what it, FedRAMP, all that wonderful stuff. So, Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation, and you know, maybe you can clear up the weather report on cloud here for us. I don't know.
The clouds are moving in.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we could do every pun in the book, but of course, I'm in a great mood today because 2 days ago, my New England Patriots won the Super Bowl. So
yep,
I'm a happy man. I got my hat on, my Patriots hat. So all is right in the world right now. And, the forces of good have taken the field. So, but it's okay, Alex. First, let's get a little bit about your background. And, it's always interesting to get people's stories about how they even got into government contracts, because it is a kind of a unique field and relatively narrow field. So how'd you get involved?
Well, I would say that I wasn't raised a lawyer. So
that's good for you. I'm spoken as a lawyer as well. So,
my career started as an Air Force intelligence officer. I was an Air Force intelligence officer for 10 years active duty, where I was sent around the world and doing fun things. Eventually, it brought me to Fort Meade, where I worked for the Department of Defense at Fort Meade,
mm-hmm.
and from there into the Pentagon. And when I moved to the Pentagon, I decided to go to law school. And it was the perfect time because at the time I would have been the intelligence crisis manager for Sleepy Hollow countries such as Afghanistan and Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
And that was on August 1st, 2001. So I started law school the same day I started the Pentagon.
Wow.
And then the events of 9/11 transformed my military career dramatically, but I continued with law school and eventually came out of law school. Did litigation for a long time, always expecting to go into either national security law or government contracts, and eventually found my way after a federal clerkship into getting into government contracts at Shepard Mullin. And it's been, I actually enjoy it because I feel it marries my two lives.
Sure, absolutely. And before we go any further, thank you for your service.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
But I noticed something else really interesting before we get into our technical discussion. But I understand that you are an award-winning screenwriter and director. Is that?
I am.
Tell us about that, just real quick.
It's always been a hobby of mine. I love movies. I love television shows, and so I write a lot of screenplays, a lot of writer scripts. And what some people don't know is there are actually competitions, and in one of the competitions, they allow winners to make their movies, so they actually fund
Very cool.
the movie. And so I was. A lot of the opportunity to get a professional cast and crew and make a comedy short out in New Mexico on location under union rules. And it was a lot of work and a lot of fun, and I want to do it again.
Okay. Well, hopefully you get that chance. You sound like a Renaissance man here, Alex. I don't know. So, well, let's get to the cloud. And I guess let's start with the sort of cloud 101 because I, even now, and I'm a layperson when it comes to this stuff, and what is that cloud? What is that concept? And then we can start transitioning what it means for government.
Right. Well, and that's the best place to start because the cloud as it's defined generally, as everybody knows it, they know about the iCloud because they use it so much at their home. And nowadays, tablets and it's all there. Everybody talks about the cloud. But the cloud is specifically defined for our purposes, for legal purposes, by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And under NIST, they have a specific listing of what a cloud computing is. And essentially, it is the ability to reach in and have your data stored somewhere else to allow you to have better access, easier access, quicker access, more cost-effective access to that data so that you don't necessarily need to hold the data, but someone else holds that data for you, allow you to flex as needed.
Okay. So, and it is, it does seem to me, it strikes me, it's very cost-effective. You don't have to own all that infrastructure to be able to store the data, write the servers, all that kind of stuff.
Right, it can be cost effective, and I think that's a huge thing. I think for the we'll get into the government side. For the government, it's hugely cost effective, or potentially, I should say. Cost effective, but it's not for everybody. So there are going to be small businesses that, you know, sometimes it's just easier to have your information reside on a server, or even some state and local. They don't necessarily need this ubiquitous cloud to go in to reach their data. They can do it all locally, and right. and there could be a cost effectiveness that way.
Is it the key there? That it's economies of scale.
It really is. And how diverse your population of data users will be.
Okay.
So that's a huge...
What do you mean by that? Explain.
So, you know, for instance, I think the government's a great aspect where, you know, you're going to have someone at USDA in D.C. or in Tacoma or wherever all reaching in and pulling that same data. So that, for them, is going to be a lot easier that they don't need to necessarily store that data. They can keep that data somewhere else that can be readily accessed almost anywhere. Where if you're a local church, then you wouldn't necessarily need that. You don't need people to be able to reach in from all over the world. You can store your own data, and it'd probably be more cost effective.
Right. So it sounds like there's a common set of information or data, and lots of people pulling at that data
Absolutely.
Or accessing that data as a keys to type of organizations where it makes the most business sense.
Right.
Okay. So, and, you know, so there's all these terms like SaaS and PaaS and okay, what are these? Am I pronouncing them correctly?
Yes,
first?
I think I've never. I'm afraid people are going to start using them as words. But right. So you have software. They're all as a service. So they're different types of cloud offerings, and each type of cloud offering, it's distinct and it provides its own functionality and utility. So I look at the first IaaS, infrastructure as a service. This is the what would be like the Amazon AWS model that we hear a lot about. So it's the complete infrastructure of cloud information, Google, Microsoft Azure, that sort of thing. Then when you get into platform as a service is a little bit more unique and it's a little bit more techy. But platform as a service is where people actually can create the software, can create the apps.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that's very interesting about cloud. You know, the cloud is based on almost funded by and based on apps. And, you know, you need an app to move to the cloud or store to the cloud or to use the cloud. And in platform as a service, you're actually being able to create that app on the cloud from which to pull. It's nothing that we would all recognize like we would Amazon or Azure or what have you.
So it sounds like that's more unique to particular user than infrastructures.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. I think so. I think that's a good way to look at it. And then you have software as a service. This is what we're probably all familiar with. This is Gmail. This is those kind of iTunes. You know, that's that kind of software as a service. The software that we use on the cloud, that we use specifically to access the cloud and pull from the cloud, and that is probably where most people are familiar with. Cloud computing.
That's what I'm familiar
right.
with, I guess, right? So, and now I'm starting to hear this term hybrid, like hybrid cloud. You know, I think, for example, IBM's talking about it as one of their go-to-market strategies. What is that?
A hybrid cloud, as I understand it, a hybrid cloud is a combination of a public cloud and a private cloud. So generally when you're going to have a cloud, you're going to have, if you can think about who can reach into it, is it going to be locked away? So for instance, you know, I think the CIA's cloud is a great example of this, where you have a nobody get in, nobody get out. This is my cloud. Hey, you get off my cloud, and all the other puns.
Sounds like
said.
A song.
That's right.
Right.
We should write that.
Right.
And then you have a public cloud. Public cloud is more where they intermix your data with other people's data, although you only have access to it. So like the iCloud is an example here. But then what the hybrid cloud is to try to a combination of both of those. So how can you make a private cloud that is within a public cloud?
Right.
And so that is...
Is tailoring it part of it, aspect of it too, like where you might combine software as a service with platform?
It can be. And I think because you can't necessarily... If you're going to be providing a complete cloud offering, you want it all, right? You want to be able to say we have infrastructure, we have platform, we have software that you can use. Use as much or as little as you want. So
right.
I think,
and tailor it to you... To what your needs are, right, across
specifically.
Those solutions. Okay. You know what, Alex? We're already at the first break.
Wow.
It does go fast. But I know you are a co-editor of the Cloud Computing Legal Desk Book with Thompson and West, and we're going to get into some of the legal issues and talk FedRAMP and government contracts' unique challenges that companies face and that you help them navigate when we come back. But right now, we do have to take a break. My guest today is Alex Major. He's an attorney at Shepard Mullin, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Alex Major. Alex is an attorney at Shepard Mullin in Shepard Mullin's government contracts practice. And Alex focuses a great deal of his time on navigating the cloud or, you know, providing those weather predictions, right? I got to stop myself. I got to stop it. You know, when we took the first break, Alex, you know, I mentioned the fact that you're a co-editor of the Thompson and West's Cloud Computing Legal Desk Book. What is that desk book and how can people find it and what does it help them with?
Absolutely. A couple of years back, one of the partners at my firm, Jonathan Arony, had the vision to say that, you know, this cloud thing is going to be big. Hey, this cloud thing, it's going to happen. The kids really dig this. So we wanted to put together a book that that focused on the legal issues surrounding the cloud. And so we started doing that, and it really took on a GovCon focus, primarily being we were GovCon attorneys doing it. But we asked for additional input from M&A and tax and anybody we can, and you know, so many of our partners in our groups. And what we've done this year, the book's been out there for a couple of years. It's on Westlaw. It's available through Thomson Reuters. But what we wanted to do this year, after giving it to some commercial clients, we realized that it was a little too GovCon heavy and a little too GovCon focused. And the cloud is definitely much bigger. I think the government is taking the biggest jump at the cloud and the biggest push for the cloud, but it was it needed to be a lot more broad. So what we've done this year is we've taken that book and tried to move it into a process where you're actually seeing your decision to go into the cloud. So we are looking at negotiating cloud contracts. We're talking about cybersecurity. I write a lot on cybersecurity. Things that really are issue focused in the cloud, to include banking, to include cloud payment systems, which is I didn't write it, but I was really wanted to see that for Bitcoin and those.
Right,
sorts
and
of things.
What about it? Is it iPayment or whatever that
right,
is?
The, right, the new Apple clouds. So There's a lot going on in the cloud, and what we wanted to do is we wanted to provide companies, we wanted to provide attorneys, we wanted to provide customers the ability to sit there and go, okay, well, this is great. This cloud thing is really happening, but what do I need to worry about?
And so what are some of those things that they need to think about?
I think the first and foremost is making sure that you know what data you have and what data you need to have, and you need to know where that data is. I think that is huge. I think that is the root of all problems. That is the root of all evil. The second,
and you're talking about when you're deciding to go in the cloud, understanding what you already have,
yes,
first, and what you want to put into the cloud, and where it all is,
right?
I hear you.
You need to know that. And then the other thing is, you need to know who needs access. And this is where I think a lot of companies fall down. You just need to know who needs access, because you know we can talk for days on insider threat, but you need to know who needs access, who does not need access. And you need to have a good sense of that. So that, again, goes to your data migration strategy. And then second of all, you need to know where your crown jewels are. And this goes back to my security focus.
Okay. But, so what do you mean by the crown jewels? Like intellectual property of the company?
The things that if it got out would be really detrimental. You need to make sure that you have that well protected and well understood so that when it is in the cloud, you know, A, where it is, who's looking at it, why they're looking at it. Are they looking at it the right way? Are they looking at it the wrong way? Are they doing something with it? All of that, which is very important. And then finally, I think the end all be all of pretty much all of this is to make sure that your data is secure.
Right. Oh, I was going to go there. So what are, I guess, the biggest challenges companies face in terms of structuring that cyber solution? Or what are the legal aspects of it that you need to think about, that you advise people about?
I think the biggest issue with cybersecurity is, and you see this everywhere, you see it in the five recent cybersecurity laws that were passed by Congress, is we have a data breach mentality, which means how do you put out the fire?
After it started.
Right. And the problem with cybersecurity is you can't do that. there's a website out there called The Third Certainty. So the first certainty, of course, is the first two are death and taxes. The third one is a data breach. It's going to happen. And so a lot of companies, I think most companies really take, okay, you know, let's focus on what happens when it does happen.
Because we know it's going to happen, right? Instant.
Right. But what I think a lot of companies need to do, and what I think they're a little slow on the go is to figure out how can we do our best to stop it. And that's a much bigger conversation, but it's also a conversation that needs to be maintained not just by the IT guys and not just by the information security guys. It's not something that needs to be in the C-suite, at the board of directors. It's not yet. It's getting there. It's getting there. And I think the more opinions that are drafted by courts and by the FTC and the FCC and the SEC, it will start people thinking a lot more about it. But it really needs to be a corporate decision and a corporate thought.
Right. So are you talking about things like continuous monitoring?
Right. Testing, continuous monitoring.
Predictive, whatever.
Predictive analysis. For insider threat.
Yeah.
All of that needs to be, and it needs to be at a high level. It really does. It needs to be, and the hard part with that, and I think we all understand it, you have to invest. But what you're investing in is either an eventuality that will happen that you don't want to happen, or in something that will never happen, so there's no payback. And that's where it becomes very challenging for a lot of companies to see until you have a regulator knocking on the door, or you know, someone from North Korea or some other nefarious state.
Russia.
That's right.
Well, no, you didn't hear me say that. So what's the, I'm just curious now, really, it's very interesting. So the fire drill, you've had a breach, you know, what role does, you know, counsel play in, well, okay, we've had something happen. We have an incident, a breach. What are the steps? What role does counsel play in that kind of?
I think counsel helps navigate, first and foremost, the data breach laws for a particular state. There is not a federal data breach law. There's 47 different states, though, that each have their data breach laws with their specific requirements. So as a result, counsel plays a key role in that, trying to figure out, okay, here's what we have to do.
What the responsibilities of the company in response to it.
Right.
And
what kind of data you have.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are specific, and I know we're kind of moving outside the cloud, but there are specific requirements under the DFARS for defense contractors that, you know, if you have a breach, you have 72 hours to report. And there's a new, under the 2015 NDAA, there is a new requirement for operational contractors, so kind of the logistics folks.
Sure.
And as a result, they're going to have some sort of requirement come down the pike. So, you know, I think it's up to counsel, first and foremost, to find out what requirements you're operating under. It's weird to say this, but also to identify what kind of company you are. So, you know, are you one of those operational intelligence or operational authority companies, or are you subject to DFARS? Do you have contracts that have DFARS clause in it? Are you controlling intelligence information that require that? Counsel is pivotal. And then finally, another piece of counsel is to figure out, should we call the Secret Service? When do we call the Secret Service?
Uh-huh. So is one of the things you're seeing, because we hear it from companies, is that there's still, like even in the department, different services or different activities will have different requirements in their contracts with regard to security. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And that's, it really is Wild West out there. It is really Wild West. So not only do you have all the people coming in from all the bad guys, then you have regulators coming in at you from everywhere, trying to hold you to standards of quote unquote reasonableness. And as attorneys, we know as soon as you have to start arguing reasonableness, you're kind of already in the downhill part of that battle.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of different contractual requirements that will require contractors or really anybody to have a really good understanding. And the key here is it's not just the contracts. It's also the subcontractors and the vendors with whom you're contracting.
Things flow down,
yeah,
right?
Well, things flow down, but there's also going to be avenues of where the vendor or your customers will have access to your systems, whether you know it or not. And they could impede you. They could hurt you. You look at the Target breach.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
right?
it's from an HVAC vendor. And when you hear that, you're thinking, you know, a little piece of me, again, going back to the screenwriter in me, goes, that is so cool.
Right.
Like, and then I feel bad because it's like, oh, but that's awful.
Yeah.
Because who would have thought that?
Right. Alex, we're already up on our next break, so we will take our break when we'll get to FedRAMP the next segment. We didn't get it this time, but that's some fascinating stuff. My guest today is Alex Major. He is an attorney at Shepard Mullin focusing on government contracts, cybersecurity, and the cloud. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Alex Major. Alex is an attorney at Shepard Mullin focusing on government contracts and doing a lot of work in the cloud, is a co-editor of the Cloud Computing Legal Desk Book with Thomson and Reuters. And Alex, let's turn back a little bit more to the true GovCon world, I guess. I don't know how else to say it. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about and get your insights on or take on is FedRAMP. And we'll just start with the open-ended question for the listeners. What is FedRAMP? People hear about it all the time and the FedRAMP process and whatnot.
Yeah,
so
I have at it.
Please.
I had the question was, what is FedRAMP? Is it a process? Is it an organization? Is it an office?
Is it a ramp?
I don't know. Where is it?
And
what FedRAMP is FedRAMP is actually, I think it's a really well thought of program, office, and plan and procedure that essentially assesses cloud computing security for the government. The government really pushes for the use once or do once, use many times mentality. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to make sure that they're vetting their cloud providers accordingly and that everybody can get the same goodness out of the cloud, if you will.
Right. And so, and the companies had the same sort of
process.
Stamp of approval.
Right. It's a standardized process upon which cloud providers can go in and show that they are secure enough to store government information. And I want to say to date, close to 21 providers are providing cloud services. And then there's another side of it called 3PAOs, third-party assessors. And what these are they're independent assessors of the cloud providers that they can go to.
Right.
And I think there's 330 or some a very large number of 3PAOs. And all it does is they essentially try to make sure that what the government is getting is meeting its security requirements.
Okay. And is this process efficient? Or is it? I mean, what's the feedback here?
I think they would even admit that they're not as efficient as they want to be. Matter of fact, I know they've said that recently. They have a program coming out called FedRAMP Forward, and in FedRAMP Forward, they're actually identifying over the next 2 years how can we become more efficient, how can we become faster. I am not going to bore you with the vegetable soup that is FedRAMP.
That'd be fine.
If you read,
I'm okay with that.
One of the things in the book is it really does become it's awful. Like JAB, and you're looking at all the JAB and ATO, and eventually you really need to carry along. But there are different types of authorities that companies get, and different levels, if you will. One is the highest, the gold star, as they would as FedRAMP the office would say, is the JAB, the provisional authority, and there are a number of different ways that a company who is providing cloud services, and it could be cloud services, again, like we talked about earlier, as a platform, as a structure, as an infrastructure, can be provided to the government. And what FedRAMP does is they want to make sure that no matter what you are, no matter what you're providing, that you are going to be securing that data at the appropriate level. And that's the hard part. And it could take up, honestly, for the JAB, which is the gold star, it could take up to 10 months. So wow. It's not quick.
Okay.
And FedRAMP recognizes that and wants to make it smaller.
And right. And then that's a key consideration to ensure you have competition in the market for the federal government. Right?
Absolutely. So. And one of the things they're running into is there is a lot of problems. I wouldn't say a lot of problems, but there's difficulty now in how exactly do you put that into a contract? Must they be?
Right. Or is it a conditional performance,
right? Yeah. Or must you be able to attain? And so,
sure.
and that's still being sort of worked out.
Right, that could be a lovely subject for litigation, right?
I think there actually have been. There was a recent bid protest that looked at that exact issue. I think GAO settled it. Trying to remember which one it was, but they looked at it. They looked at what exactly could you say and what exactly needed to be said.
Okay. By the government or by the awardee.
By the government or by the awardee.
Another area I know that you've taken a look at, and GSA with a lot of fanfare put out there, was the idea of creating a separate line item on the GSA IT Schedule 70 for cloud computing, a single, quote, cloud SIN.
Right.
And they did have an RFI out there, I believe, and, you know, for the sake of full disclosure, the coalition provided comments on that. I just wanted to get your read of that RFI and what you see as the major issues for GSA to address.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, right now, I think cloud services are offered under three different SINs, which is a little ridiculous. It also allows
very confusing.
It is, and it doesn't allow cloud providers to actually sit there and provide, basically you have to, if you're a government customer, you have to actually sort through, wait, that's not a cloud provider, that isn't. And I think that's difficult, and I don't think you want to do that. The other thing that I think the single SIN allows is, as GSA would like it to finally evolve, is it would identify particular services that you are offering as a cloud provider so that you as the vendor can say, no, we can give you this, 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 and this. And it allows your customers to better understand what you're selling as opposed to these really broad SINs.
So it could be more specific and more descriptive. Absolutely. As to the services that are being potentially could be provided.
Right. And it can go back, like we said, with the FedRAMP status, you know?
Right.
Like, okay, we need someone that is FedRAMP certified now or capable of getting FedRAMP certified, or, you know, we just need an agency authority to operate versus the full JAB. So sure. It could really say, you know, for the small cloud providers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to happen.
Right. So I think it's a good idea generally for GSA to do it as well, but I'll bring it up.
Okay.
But I'll just ask you your thoughts. You know, the price reduction clause and the pricing model, it seems inconsistent with access to commercial cloud solutions.
I agree. I don't know how they do that, because one of the key functionalities, and we talked about it a little earlier, is that it allows you to expand and it allows you to subtract and
even in their RFI, they did talk about tailoring at the task order level solutions to, and they acknowledged that you have to do that in the cloud, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. How do you adjust your basis of award customer? You know, we already counsel people all the time on basis of award customers and how, you know, you never use commercial class of customers. Well, it's, you know, okay, so you can use a particular sector or a particular group, but I don't know. I'd be very cautious. I haven't seen one yet, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say, if I was counseling a client on trying to fill out its, you know, trying to negotiate this kind of contract, I'd be very, very cautious. You would need to know very clearly, and you would have to limit. I would strongly recommend limiting your basis of award customer, because if it is going to have to operate, it's going to have to operate.
Because even your basis of award customer, there'd be tailoring there, right?
Right.
And things could change, you know, daily, theoretically. Yeah. Right?
If it maintains, and I can't imagine it going away for just cloud computing or not, but it seems way too flexible. Cloud computing and what it offers.
Versus a clause.
Right, right.
The clause is inflexible.
Right. And or it changes so much and changes frequently. How would you keep that up? It's hard enough with commercial items. I couldn't imagine it with data. They're going to do it by, you know, gig sure. or byte.
So it's interesting. Yeah, you brought up, can they apply it or not apply it? I'll just, you know, one of the things that I'm going to get out here is that, you know, GSA has the authority today to actually, you know, do a deviation, the ability to do deviations from GSAR clauses, which is price reduction clauses. You know, the senior procurement executive for GSA can do that with a stroke of a pen and not apply it. All that has to happen is the head of the contracting activity, the commissioner of FAS, submit a request to deviate from that part of the GSAR. And under the regulations, you know, if they have good rationale to do so, which in this case, it is clearly inconsistent with commercial practice. And if they want robust, innovative solutions, they could do that tomorrow. And that would enhance competition for cloud services. That's my little speech for today.
No, and I agree. I think you're right. And I think that if you are a cloud provider and you're, you know, eventually this, when the single SIN comes out And if you see the PRC in there, I would either eat back off or maybe negotiate back and say, you know,
right.
look exactly for that exemption
yeah.
and say, we should reexamine that.
Right. So, hey, Alex, we do have to take our last break. When we come back, I think we're going to talk a little bit about the DoD market,
Great.
What's going on there, and then finish up with a little bit more cybersecurity. My guest today is Alex Major. He's an attorney at Shepard Mullin, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Alex Major. Alex is an attorney at Shepard Mullin, focusing on government contracts and cloud and cyber security issues. And Alex, this segment, I think we want to talk a little bit about the DoD marketplace and its, you know, thirst, I guess, for commercial cloud products. I'm just going to open it up and give us your take on it.
DoD is doing is really moving finally, and I say that with all due respect to the Department of Defense, and I'll say that why in a minute. But DoD is really moving now into cloud. I think they were very cautious to put their foot in the water. They recognized they needed to do it. I mean, they were literally had to do it. But now that
potential for huge savings for them, right?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. When they start getting it right.
All right. So I'm interested now. I'll hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I'll start there then. DoD, so they did start moving. They had DISA as the quote-unquote broker, and I think the one of the issues that I've heard of was that they really messed up by using the word broker.
Right.
That they should not have used the word broker.
GSA tried to do that too.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that a problem?
I think it tells the individual agencies and the individual services that I think it sort of feels like they deflate their ability and authority to look for what they want, that they must go through one person.
Right, the broker sort of decides for them.
Right.
Right.
You tell me what's right for me. No. You know, I'm the Navy. I'll tell you what's right for me.
Right.
So they've now done away with that. And I think that's going to cause them additional problems. But now the agencies are permitted to pursue, and DISA will be essentially, I don't want to call them FedRAMP-ish, but they'll be looking at the security, and they've released security requirement guidelines that advises cloud providers what they need to do and how they need to do it. But I said it just a second ago. The reason I think that, and I give all deference to what DoD had to do, is I think DoD, unlike many of the other agencies, are and of course they're, you know, near and dear to my heart. But what the DoD has in terms of data is broader and wider and bigger than any other department in the government.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
From public-facing websites to, you know, recruiting stuff, right? So they have to get that information out there all the way to TSSCI. And so, you know, how do you manage that? And then you have healthcare information and PII and, you know, and criminal records. So you look at what they have, and I think it's sort of it doesn't give them the respect they need to say, well, they've been really slow to go to the cloud. No, they've been very cautious to go to the cloud, and rightfully so, because they're holding our crown jewels in many respects.
Right. So, they have their challenges are just all the – what you talked about, where all the data is.
Right.
What is the data, right? You know, and how what the levels of protection, all those kind of things. That when we started the show, we went through that kind of drill, right? It's
right.
The same, but on a scale that's – beyond
it's
anything.
Huge. It's huge. And that's one of the things that the DISA SRG, which was recently released.
So that's a security requirements guide?
Right. The security requirements guide sets out. They look at the impact levels of the data. There's six generally recognized by NIST. And what the SRG does is it compresses them. Basically, it shows one and two, which is sort of the publicly facing kind, three and four, which is a little bit more of the PII, the criminal stuff. And then you have level five and level six. And level five is the sensitive FOUO type information, and level six is secret. So they're not giving it all the way to the, you know, above secret. They're
sure.
Letting that in the Intel cloud. But for the most part, they're really trying to simplify their security requirements. And I think they're making good progress.
Right. Does that will that then translate into the contract terms that people see for cloud services? Because, you know, we talked earlier in the show that there's a lot of variation in cloud terms and particularly security terms that we're seeing. We get reports from companies to that effect. And so what they might have to do for the Navy, for a Navy activity versus some Army activity over here, there's still guidelines, but they're tailoring things that, you know, make it difficult, costly for a company,
right?
Fundamentally,
yeah. And that's the thing that I think is going to be hard with when you remove the broker, when you remove DISA from the single point of action. What you're going to run into, it's the same thing that we ran into in the military throughout the 90s, is you're going to run into interoperability problems. And so I think with vendors, as they're providing solutions to the Army separate, to the Navy separate, to the Air Force separate, they should really start thinking about interoperability, regardless if the Navy, Army, or Air Force are thinking about interoperability, because it's going to come back around. It's going to have to. And it's always been a problem with services. And
yes.
It will continue. Yeah, it will continue to be a problem. So, and that's probably why the brokerage failed.
Right. So, and, I understand that in December, the DODIG had something to say about the department's cloud strategy.
Right. That's what we were talking about, the cost. So they don't think, in mid-December, DOD wanted to take a look to just see how much cloud savings the department was actually having. And they didn't find a lot of cost savings. And a lot of that came down to the fact that cloud is still new. The people don't know, they're not trained, they don't really know what they're looking for. They keep using it, probably just like you and I, like, oh, cloud, iTunes or Amazon.
Sure.
But for the most part, they weren't operating as effectively and efficiently as they needed to. And so as a result, where there is definitely a huge market for cloud computing, in the DOD, I think it's very important for vendors to realize that there's also a lot of focus on that right now by the DODIG, and they're going to be looking at it more and more. So generally, I think that there is a penchant by the government that at some point it's going to be an issue that it's not the government's fault, it's going to be the contractor's fault. So I think if you're looking into it,
that's standing operating procedure, right?
That you better be prepared for that and make sure that all your ducks are in a row if offering and if providing. And again, this goes back to the single SIN. This goes back to very clearly identifying for contractors, clearly identifying what you're going to be providing, what you're not going to be providing, and the requirements and controls you're using.
Is that your big major piece of advice for companies who are commercial?
I think so. I think for commercial cloud providers, if you are dealing with the government, if you're dealing with the Department of Defense or whatever, you need to be very, very clear what you're providing and the security controls you have in place up and above what NIST is providing, perhaps. FedRAMP High, we didn't talk about that, but there are certain controls that are required and they are not. They're not requirements. They're baselines. They're a baseline.
Sure.
And you need to make sure that you are comfortable with it as a contractor. You need to make sure your contracting officer is comfortable with it. And you need to make sure your contracting officer understands it. And I think that's going to be the hardest part.
Right. So we got about a minute left. So we can't even really tackle anything more on cybersecurity other to ask you if you can do this just generally. There were 5 cybersecurity-related bills that were signed into law in December.
Right.
Is there some big picture, one thought about those that you would want to your clients to know about?
I think it's primarily it's housekeeping. It's government housekeeping for the most part, how the government is supposed to react to cybersecurity and who has control of cybersecurity.
So it's very sort of organizational, structural for the government, governance structure kind of
exactly.
thing?
Exactly. It goes back again to the concept of breaches. Again, it's the thing that I find irritating.
It's supposed to prevent it.
Right, right. I don't need to know how to put the fire out. I need to know how to not start the fire or what to do when the match is lit. So,
right. So in the context of being a sort of structural type targeted legislation, ultimately, that does, and maybe we'll have you come back and talk about what does that mean for contractors, because I've got it. They'll have to make the whatever organizational changes that the government does pursuant to this legislation. Ultimately, that means something for companies, and I'm going to have you back to talk about that, okay, Alex?
That sounds good to me. I'm ready.
Okay. I want to thank my guest today, Alex Major. He's an attorney at Shepard Mullin, focusing on government contracts and cloud and cyber. You've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.